Well, thank you very much. Good Sabbath to everyone. And I also apologize for the delay in services. I'm a little saddened by that because the sermon today, I had actually put together the sermon because of a sermonette that we were going to hear given by Kristen Carpenter about bitterness. Mr. Carpenter has been holding services at his home down in Australia. And in Adelaide, I believe, and he has been relating or passing along some of the sermonettes given, and we have been using some of those, and it worked great last week, with the exception of the video paused there for a little while, and we had a little connection, but today we just can't get any sound, and anyway, so we tried and tried and could not get the sound for that sermonette, which caused the delay in services, so we need to go forward. Regardless of hearing either the sermonette or the sermon today or combined messages, each one does stand alone, and it was in a very important subject that Mr. Carpenter had talked about bitterness. It's a warning to all of God's people that we have to be cautious when we are offended as not to develop lasting feelings of anger or resentment, things that can lead us to becoming bitter. Now, the example, one of the examples that Mr. Carpenter had given was Marvin Heemeyer, and that was an extreme situation that took place a number of years ago where his bitterness led him to build a tank-like bulldozer and drive through town, destroying buildings. And ended up, Mr. Heemeyer actually took his own life in that incident. But the illustration that Mr. Carpenter had given may be one that's excessive, an excessive form of bitterness, but it doesn't mean that that example is not good for us to consider because perhaps our resentment is not as intense, maybe not as harmful. Mr. Carpenter had also talked about Simon the Sorcerer and also Saul, and these are two individuals in the Bible who had become bitter. But again, those examples do not mean that, well, we have to be like somebody like Simon the Sorcerer, who was a fraud trying to buy the Holy Spirit in order to be bitter, or it doesn't take us, you know, desiring to, or regretting, I should say, selling our birthright, as did Esau. And he became very resentful or bitter. We don't have to be like Saul, who coveted God's favor of another man. Those are good examples that were used in the sermonette that Kristen gave. And they are enduring examples for all of us to consider. And we should consider those and keep those in mind. But are there other, not as dramatic or extreme situations that might still cause us to develop a root of bitterness? And this is an important topic, which is why I wanted to explore it a bit deeper today. Mr. Carpenter would have given the initial message, and then I would give something that would perhaps be just a little bit of icing on the cake for that message. So I want to explore it because bitterness in any form, it can cause harm to us and to others. Perhaps we have seen the result of bitterness that has allowed for some people to develop ill characteristics. Some people might say, well, it just seems like they're angry all the time. It's just part of their nature anymore. They're just upset all the time, resentful. Some people have even formed a lasting countenance of bitterness, even affecting their facial features, where we see some people just seem like they are just a bitter person. There are people who have had ulcers, who have developed hypertension, myocardial infarction, which is the technical term for heart attacks. Even some people have developed certain cancers because of this toxic environment they have allowed to develop in their body of bitterness. Now, understanding the harm that it can do to people in this life, as well as the possibility, as Mr. Carpenter had mentioned in his sermonette, of it being an obstacle towards salvation, it would be prudent for us to understand exactly what bitterness is and what it means to be bitter in the heart or in the mind. So I'd like to look at Exodus chapter 1 for just a moment, very briefly, Exodus 1. I want to consider a few examples of bitterness that is used to describe several different things. And one of them is a life experience or a situation that is very difficult to bear, hard to handle, hard to experience. Exodus chapter 1, a very familiar situation here. Verse 13, it talks about the people of Israel. The Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor, meaning they were cruel to them. Hard bondage. It means to fracture their lives even. They were even, you know, abused physically as well as mentally. It said it made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field. And all the service in which they made them serve was with rigor. And so this is a situation where the experience of their lives was a bitter experience. And Job had said something similar in his account, where he had lost his family, he had lost friends, he had developed an extremely discomforting illness, causing a disfiguration of the outer layer of his body, his skin. And this was a bitter experience, he expressed. And some people might be facing bitter experiences today, whether it be from an illness or some kind of loss in our lives, and we would call it a bitter situation. But allowing such situations to cause us to become bitter, it is something different. Now, another definition of bitter is a characteristic of taste, and we are quite familiar with that expression. Israel was told to eat the Passover meal along with bitter herbs, and those were likely some kind of wild lettuce, such as maybe certain types of romaine lettuce. We've probably get those spring mixes of lettuce in the store, and some of them are quite bitter. There were also the bitter waters of Marah that the children of Israel, when they went across the Red Sea, could not drink. And those waters were probably more than just distasteful. It could be that they were just very salty, but it's also possible that there was some kind of toxin in the waters that would have been poisonous to them. But those are not the only forms of bitterness. We have some types of bitterness that people actually enjoy eating. Most beer, ale, or lagers have degrees of bitterness, which has come... is like a science today. It's actually measured in IBUs, which is means International Bitter Units, and there's quite a little bit of a complex formula to figure out the IBUs of certain alcoholic drinks. And some people enjoy this quality of beer or lager or ale or food. Certain foods have a bitterness to them. It's also described as being acrid, which means strong. It's a sharp taste to it, but not sour. Now, sour is a different descriptive term of food. In fact, there are five categories of tastes. There is sweet, sour, salty, savory, and bitterness. Savory is also called by some umami, and I'm not exactly sure where that term came from. I think it might be a Japanese term, perhaps. Mia knows that. She knows a little bit of Japanese. Now, some people would argue there's another category of taste, which is spicy, but that's debatable. But in any case, something that's very interesting we've likely all heard is that our tongues were actually designed to be more sensitive to these tastes, depending on the area of the tongue. And so the tip of your tongue is more sensitive to sweetness. And so we can have a wider variety of be able to taste different types of sweetness on the tip of our tongue. And just behind that, the front sides of our tongue is more sensitive to sour. The back sides of our tongue is more sensitive to salty. And the very back portion of our tongue all the way across is more sensitive to bitterness. And then the middle portion of our tongue is more sensitive to the taste of savory or umami. Now, these things can kind of be combined. We all do that when we taste foods. We'll go like, I taste some sweetness, and there's a little bit of bitterness, and there's a little bit of savory, and you can kind of, you know, get a sense of a lot of different flavors at once. It's a wonderful design that God made, the human tongue being able to be sensitive to all of these things in certain areas. Well, the definitions of these terms, bitter, that I had just briefly went over, whether it be a life experience or a flavor, a type of taste, these are things that sometimes people want to avoid. Sometimes they do not want to avoid them if it's a bitter flavor that we actually enjoy, depending on our preference. But the bitterness that is to be avoided is not something that we can taste, and it's not a life experience. It's talking about the experience of becoming bitter. And so that might be the result of a life experience. Perhaps we went through something that was very difficult for us to bear, and perhaps people may have allowed that to cause them to become bitter. The bitterness that Mr. Carpenter had talked about, and that I'm talking about today, the subject of the sermon, it's an attitude. It's an attitude that becomes a trait, resulting in extreme or lasting, I should say, forms of anger and resentment. And it can cause us to be hostile. It can cause us to be sad. It can cause any number of things. It could cause us to cast off restraint and causes us to sin, therefore. And although bitterness is something that should be feared, it should be something that we reject, what makes this trait even more threatening to all of us is that bitterness is often embraced by people. They often feel justified in being bitter. Sometimes it's even displayed as like a badge of honor. So we have all likely observed this condition in others, and yet it is something that is extremely difficult to see in our own selves. And the reason is because there is an adverse human tendency to be self-righteous. As the scriptures relate to us, every man or woman is right in their own eyes. We all think that we know what's best for us and for other people. And the bitterness, therefore, that might develop when it takes root, it's usually mistaken by people as zeal, as a passion, something that's positive, but it's really fervor run amok. So the bitterness that was used to describe Simon the sorcerer is not the bitterness that was used to describe how the children of Israel felt by their affliction by the Egyptians while in bondage. The bitter herbs that were described is not what we're talking about. It's not what Paul used to describe unrighteousness in the book of Hebrews, and perhaps we'll read that. I wasn't going to read it because it was read in the sermonette, but I think we will read that today. Because the bitterness that was spoken of in the sermonette that I had listened to, I wish you could have heard it, but perhaps we'll still be able to play it at some point. It's a position of the heart that is not right before God. And even though the person might feel entirely justified in their misguided passion, they might even feel like they are inspired to have that type of attitude, but it is something that is not inspired by God. James 3, let's go over to the book of James. James had described in his book both good and bad characteristics. This is a profound letter that James had written to the 12 tribes. Now, and that's what it says in the beginning of his letter. And some people actually like to try and discount the book of James for this reason and for another important reason. And one of them is that because James advocates works, that works are a sign of us actually having faith. And some people like to think we don't want that. We don't like works. What do you mean, work? I don't want to have to do something in order for God to consider me to be faithful. So some people reject the book of James. Some people will say, well, it doesn't apply to us because, you know, we might be Gentiles, and James said it's directed to the 12 tribes. That's not one of us, even though a lot of people that might think they're Gentile probably have some DNA from one of the 12 tribes of Israel. But regardless of what people might think, it does apply to everyone. The words given by James apply to all of us. And so James chapter 3 and verse 13, James wrote, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom." And that's very important for us to remember. Works done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. And this term, I think it's interesting to point out, self-seeking. It's actually translated as strife in many translations of the Bible, which basically means contention. And I think that perhaps might be a better translation if you have bitter envy and contention in your hearts, although contention is usually evolved around self-seeking. We usually have strife because we're not getting what we want and we get upset about it. In any case, don't boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above. Well, it's talking about the selfish knowledge. It's not talking about the wisdom of God. It's talking about this self-seeking, this bitter envy. This type of thinking does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and contention exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. He's getting to the root of the matter here. Where these things exist, confusion and every evil thing also exist around that. Even if the person isn't doing every evil thing, but that's, you know, evil is based in that, those two traits, those couple of traits there. And so James made a connection here between envy, contention, and bitterness. He says bitter envy. He even said that this condition will lead to, you know, other forms of evil, all kinds of evil even. And envy, we are aware, envy is a form of coveting. You know, you shall not covet is the 10th commandment. It's a desire to have what belongs to somebody else, but it gets to the point where it causes us to be discontent, perhaps even resentful, because we're not getting what we want, what somebody else might have. And this doesn't have to be simply about material possessions. It's not about just about stuff. It could be a job. It could be a skill that somebody else has, a talent they have. Perhaps they have a relationship that we are very envious of. There are a great many things that can be coveted in a wrong way. Now, when this envy is nurtured, it leads to contention in the heart and in the mind, resentment, anger. And this kind of thinking, James said, is worldly, earthly. It's based on the senses that we as humans have. It's demonic. It's not inspired. It's not inspired by God above. James continues in verse 17. He said, "But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." And so this goes right along with what was mentioned in Kristen's sermonette, that having a heart that is right before God is peaceable. It's gentle. It desires mercy. It shows mercy. It is willing to yield so that others will have the things that they need or the things that they want, and rejoices in those things. And it bears, in this way, it bears good fruits, as James had written. Now, it's interesting that James had said that the fruit of righteousness is described as being sown. like something like sowing seed into the ground and causing it to develop roots. And a root of bitterness is something that also grows. It is something that takes hold, like a weed does. Now, Kristen had read Hebrews 12, 14, and 15, and I'm going to go ahead and read it since we were not able to hear the sermonette, where it says, verse 14, "Pursue peace with all people in holiness, without which no one will see the Lord, looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled." And so the author here, who we believe was Paul, he described bitterness as taking root, of developing a root that needs to be removed, needs to be thoroughly removed if we do not want it to return. And the comparison, of course, is a good one, comparing it to a weed that would have tenacious roots. It's a good metaphor for us to consider, something that we've all probably had experience with. I don't know if anybody that has ever not had experience pulling a weed out of the ground, and much of the time it's, you got to be careful and make sure you get it all. But, you know, the term weed, it's really a general term. It basically is categorized as anything that you do not want to be in your garden or on your farm or in your lawn or any stretch of land. You just call it a weed because you don't want it there. It's not what I want to be growing there. And so we want to pull it out. And there are thousands of plants that would be considered weeds, things such as dandelion or purslane, or there are various forms of ivy or morning glory. There's crabgrass and ragweed and all kinds of plants, including the infamous marijuana, is a weed. Some of these plants that I had mentioned are actually can be used, are edible. Purslane, for example, is something that we get a lot of at the community garden here, lots of purslane. It's actually very nutritious. I personally have not eaten it, but I know some people that have, and it can be quite good for you. And I have heard from Mr. Fox, and I haven't tried this either, that dandelion leaves are actually good for you. It's kind of like a type of lettuce. There are some people that make dandelion wine. And still, the point is, if it is something that is growing where we do not want it to be growing, it's considered a weed, and so we need to remove it. And weeds, if you've had experience with any of these various forms of weeds, they have different types of roots depending on the weed. Some are short and thick, some are quite matted, some are very long and slender. But in order for the weed not to come back, they need to be removed along with the root. And if you don't get the bulk of the roots out, then it's very likely that it is going to return, and it's going to be harder and harder to get out the more that happens. In fact, I had read about dandelions. It's something many of us experience a lot of if we have a lawn to take care of, and dandelion roots can be quite long. I have pulled some out that are like this long, and the plant itself on top, it doesn't seem that big, but they're very long. And I had read that if you leave as little as somewhere, I think it was like a quarter or a half inch of the root, that it's going to come back. Now, it's difficult to get that type of root out. And out of all of the dandelions I've pulled in my lawn and other places, I think maybe one out of every 50 times I might get most of the root. All of the rest of the time, it always breaks off. There's always, you know, so it's, I actually got a tool that's quite a little bit helpful called Grandpa's Weeder. But still, even with that tool, it's hit and miss, and it's most of the time miss in getting the entire root out. But the author of Hebrews, he described resentment that is harbored, contention that's unsettled in our mind, which also is described as the heart. It's like a root of bitterness. And I can, of course, the first type of root that comes to mind is a dandelion one that's just long and it just keeps going and you try to get it out. Most of the time it doesn't always come out. So the best way is to not to allow them to develop. to begin to take hold in the first place, which is quite hard with dandelions. But when it comes to bitterness, we can. We have be more successful on not allowing bitterness to take root. And so when it does take root, though, if it happens to occur, a root of bitterness, it can corrupt judgment, it can cloud our discernment, it can cause us to become self-righteous. And that, when you become self-righteous, it begins to skew your reasoning. And many times we'll become unreasonable about certain things because we have that bitterness inside of us. And I've even seen some lose some basic common sense because they were so bitter. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians 13. So bitterness can take hold through a variety of circumstances. One of the primary ones, I think, is being offended in some way. And even though there are other methods, perhaps a lack of recognition or missed opportunities might cause us to become bitter, or expectations that we might have that are unmet. And these things can result in bitterness if we allow them. Even when the offense or the expectation might be unintentional, like nobody wanted that to happen, it wasn't, you know, something that was planned, I think we are all faced with situations where resentment can lead to becoming bitter if we allow it. In the world today, with the increased polarization of society, of the nations around the world, it's clear that bitterness has developed long and strong roots. And this is true in America. It's true in most of the countries around the world. Consider an example that was given in the sermonette, which we did not hear, but Mr. Carpenter had given the example of Esau, who had become bitter because he sold his birthright. And he regretted it later. And he was very upset. And that bitterness developed a root that stands to this day. To this day, the people of Esau, the descendants of Esau, are bitter towards their kin, who are the people of Israel. Thousands of years, bitterness has led to war and terrorist activity that has murdered, slaughtered countless numbers of individuals. But what about us? You know, what about us? Are there ways in which we might be allowing for some of these feelings to take root, to develop, to begin to grow inside our heart and mind? And are there warning signs that we can think of, that we can watch out for, so that we don't allow this to take place? Well, there are. And that's what I hope to relate to us today. Those who might feel that they have been wronged or are dissatisfied, they might dish out some kind of retaliation. That's a warning sign to us if we just start to do this. And this could be as simple as just like giving a cold shoulder to somebody. I don't want to talk to them. No. That's bitterness. It's starting to take hold. There could be insults given or digs given, and it doesn't have to be something that's said directly to the individual. We could be, you know, disparaging to them, to others, behind their back, if you will. That could be a sign of bitterness developing. Even silence can be evidence of bitterness. We've heard of this, the silent treatment, giving people the silent treatment, refusing to participate in conversation with someone or in fellowship. This could be a sign of bitterness. In short, bitterness is a lack of love. Love is something that comes from the heart, a descriptive term referring to the mind. And understanding the fabric of God's law is based upon love. The end result of bitterness is actually a transgression of the law. It goes against the principles of God's law, which is or are based on love. And so that is why I think James referred to it as something being demonic. Not from above. It's earthly, worldly, which is where the demons are. Now, in one of Paul's letters to the church, the apostle wrote a significant portion in this letter about the importance of love. And this relatively short passage here, 1 Corinthians 13, it's read, it's heard at weddings all around the world, millions of times every year, and yet it seems that few people actually take these words to heart. Oh, they listen to them and they go, oh, that sounds nice, that's so wonderful, oh yeah, that's great. But how many people actually apply some of these words that Paul had written for all people, to benefit all people? And so I want to consider them briefly and think about it. As we read this, think about how love is opposed to bitterness. 1 Corinthians 13, it's only 13 verses in chapter 13. Paul said, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, have an understanding of prophecy, as I think is what he's referring to, and have not love, I become like sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. Very loud, boisterous, but it doesn't really mean much, just kind of sound fades away. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I'm nothing. It doesn't mean anything if you don't have love. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, well, it profits nothing. Love suffers long. Does bitterness? No, it's very impatient. And is kind. Does bitterness? No, not forgiving. It doesn't envy, but bitterness envies. Love does not parade itself. It's not puffed up, but bitterness thinks that I'm right. Bitterness actually is really wanting to feed your own ego. Does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Bitterness? Not too patient. Love never fails or ends, but whether there are prophecies, they will fail, meaning they're going to come to pass. It doesn't mean that the prophecy doesn't mean anything. It means they're going to come to pass. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. We know in part, we prophesy in part, but when that which is perfect, which is Christ, has come, then that which is in part will be done away. And when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. And really, if you think about it, resentment and bitterness, it's something that is also a sign of a lack of maturity in some way. Like a child. I'm not saying that people that are bitter are childish, but it is a childish trait. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. And now I know in part, but then I shall know just as I also am known. And now abides faith, hope, and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. And the reason he says it's the greatest, because in order to truly be faithful, you have love. In order to have hope, an enduring hope, we have love. And so these things actually work together, they're combined. But he says the greatest is love, because love has to do with everything godly. His law, as I said, is based upon love. But bitterness, it's contrary to love. And even though the bitter person may say, well, that they don't have a hatred of others, or maybe they may even profess to love others, but really, if you think about it, if their actions towards those people are not out of love, actions speak louder than words in such a case. And therefore, bitterness causes the fabric of the law, love, to decrease in our lives. And faith is adversely affected, therefore, by this enduring or lasting resentment, which is really just hate. Personal convictions in such instances become more important than moral principles. And so that is the enemy of faith. It's the enemy of love. It opposes love. Now consider the fact that bitterness actually is what poisoned Satan's heart. Yes, maybe we didn't realize that. Some of us have. Maybe we didn't realize. Satan became bitter. It's my belief that Lucifer, who was once created as the most beautiful and the most one of the most talented of all the angels, became so full of himself that eventually he wanted to be like God. I don't think he wanted to be God. He knew he could never be God, but he wanted to be like God, like a God. And so once he found out what God was doing, that he was going to create people out of dust of the earth, and that he was going to give them the opportunity to become a part of the God family, in other words, to become a part of God, which is what he felt, I should have that job. I should have that opportunity. Look at me. Look at how wonderful. Look at what I can do. And so I believe Satan, he couldn't stand this. The thought of mud men lording over him at some point. And he became bitter. He developed a root of bitterness, which is alive and well to this day. He was envious to the point of contention. He was corrupted because of this. And the devil would like nothing more, therefore, to sift the entire human race like wheat. It said of Peter, you know, Christ told Peter that the devil would like to sift you like wheat. Yeah. And everybody else, too. He doesn't care if people bow down and worship him. The only reason he would like people to worship him is because he knows that will cause them death. He knows the result, the end result of sin, and what is coming. And so as the end of the age draws near, his anger is swelling. His time is running short. And our studies have shown, we've proven, that even the plagues that are going to come upon the earth, that a good fair portion of them are actually going to be carried out by the devil and demons, as God loosens the leash, gives them a little more freedom to do what they want. And it's because that's what people deserve. Oh, you want to go the way of sin? Oh, you want to do all that, all those horrible things and have those immoral lifestyles? Okay, see what happens. Welcome to the sinful, you know, realm. Here's the spirit beings that are full of sin. And here's what they would like to do to you. So we need to consider then if we might be allowing some of these feelings of anger, of resentment to take root. And how can we know? Well, I gave a few examples of how we might be able to tell if we might be becoming bitter. And I think it would also be helpful to ask ourselves a few questions. And one of these questions is if we have ever been offended by someone and then went and shared that offense with someone else, instead of going to the person that had offended us. Now, if we have done this, it's beginning to develop a root of bitterness. Not only so, it's actually a move to try and plant a seed of bitterness in somebody else. Get them on our side. Point the finger. See, look at how bad they are. What did Christ say that we should do when we have been offended? Matthew 18, verse 15. Go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If somebody offends us, we are told to go to the person that has offended us and discuss that with them. Most of the time, the vast majority of time, that's all it's going to take. There will be reconciliation at that point. But if the offender will not reconcile, if he refuses to hear, as Christ says, take a witness, somebody that might have been involved in this situation, and then plead your case to the offender with a witness. And that should solve it. Those two steps alone actually work 99% of the time, maybe even higher statistics than that. And those two steps actually can be used within the body of Christ, within the church, and those two measures actually can be used outside of the church. If we have an offense at school or with a coworker or some, maybe our neighbor, those two steps will work. The point is, nothing productive comes from sharing our offense with other people without going to those people that have offended us first to try to reconcile, to allow them to state their view. You know, we might actually be going, oh, yeah, well, here's the situation. We know that when we hear somebody telling us about some kind of offense that happened to them, it's always skewed in some way a little bit to make them appear a little bit better. You know, being a minister in the church, I've heard people come to and plead, or I shouldn't say plead, but describe an offense, and then I'll hear the other side of it, and they're all both kind of skewing it in a way that makes them appear to be in the right and the other person is wrong. It's just a human tendency to do this. A lot of times, I don't think it's always intentional. I think it's just a mistake because we tend to see things the way we want to see them. We don't always see the things the way that other people do. And so it's best to go to that person and talk to them because maybe they saw things differently. Maybe they didn't understand something. Maybe they didn't even know they offended us. Instead of just thinking, oh, they're bad. They're bad people. I have to go tell people about this, get somebody on my side. So that's why Christ gave us those steps in Matthew 18. If you'd grab one of those booklets for me, Mia, could you grab one of those booklets over there? Or somebody? Yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you. Art, the truth about Matthew 18. So God gave us the instructions for reconciliation because he did not desire for us to seek some form of personal retribution. He really wanted to keep us to keep the issue small, you know, in-house and not start spreading it around, thank you, to everyone and causing a lot of damage. God saw that, hey, there's a way to keep this damage to a minimum here. And so here are the steps to doing so. And taking matters, if we are offended, taking the matter to the ministry is a last resort. That's the third step. That is the last resort. If the first two don't work, then we can bring it to the church for judgment. Sadly, most people in the Church of God today, when they are offended by a brother, what do? They go to the minister first. Instead of, well, step one, and that's always the response that we have given when people come to us with some situation. I will say, did you go to them and talk to them? Well, no, I didn't really. That's what you have to do first. As difficult as it might be sometimes to swallow our pride and to go talk to them about it, that's what works. Christ didn't say it just so that he could sit back and watch us argue and enjoy the contention. No. He gave us those steps because they work. Those truly do work. But people don't want to do that. They want to go to the church first for a judgment, some kind of vindication on their own. And because these steps are not followed widely throughout the wider Church of God, we wrote a booklet about it. The truth about Matthew 18. This is what needs to be done. All of these issues that are happening between brethren, they do not have to be as bad and get out of hand as they have in the past, if we would just follow the steps that Christ had outlined. Matthew chapter 5, another question that we can ask ourselves to see if we might be developing roots of bitterness is have we ever wanted someone to suffer wrong that we felt was inflicted upon us? I'm not talking about justice as far as civil laws go. If somebody, you know, ran into our house with their car, or, you know, we got in an accident or something, or maybe they broke in and, you know, our home was burglarized. There is some kind of justice that could be sought for that, so that we, you know, have our property replaced, or perhaps they'll get fined. Maybe, you know, depending on the crime, that people might even need to serve some prison time. But I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is some kind of retribution we might feel that they should get, you know, that we want them to feel what we felt, the pain that we felt. We want them to feel that. That's developing a root of bitterness. To want hurt for hurt, pain for pain, loss for loss. That is not a mindset that is born out of the kind of love that Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 13. That actually comes from resentment, which is basically just a form of hate. And for this reason, Christ said in Matthew 5 and verse 44, he said, "I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." Why? That you may be your sons of your Father in heaven, because he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and the unjust. So this was a radical teaching of Christ. It was a radical teaching then. This continues to be a radical teaching today. And even though many of us may have heard of this concept, and frankly, thousands of ministers around the world preach this from the pulpit every week, but nonetheless, it's not something that is embraced by most people. Countless numbers who claim to believe in God hold a grudge. They seek revenge. They want retribution when they are wronged. And it's a human tendency. It's a part of tainted human nature, which is why Paul had quoted Deuteronomy 32, 35 in Romans 12, and I'm not going to go there, but he had quoted the law when God said, "Vengeance is mine, says the Eternal. I'll handle it. You don't need to go there. Don't get your hands and your mind dirty in this, okay? They'll get what's coming to them at some point. Maybe not even in this life, but they'll realize what they had done was wrong, and they'll get what's coming to them." And Paul went on to say, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." That's the route that we should take. And I'm going to talk a bit more about that in just a few minutes. Let's go over to James 2. So bitterness is akin to evil. As was pointed out in the sermonette, I keep thinking about it. I'm sorry that it didn't work out this week. And Mr. Carpenter had mentioned that it may cost us our salvation if we allow it to take root and don't weed it out. Now recall that what we had read earlier, that James had said the wisdom that is from above is first pure and then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits. And mercy is something that's a foundation of what we hope God will give to us. And so it is something that Christ had shown, even while being offended and persecuted in the worst way possible, he still expressed a desire for to have mercy on his offenders. So if we desire mercy, we want God to be merciful to us because of our sins, whether they may be mistakes, or perhaps at times we might intentionally sin, knowing that it's wrong, and we repent of it later. If we want forgiveness, it's something that we have to express to other people. So James had also written in James 2, in verse 13, he said, "Judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment." So judgment without mercy. Does any one of us desire to have judgment without mercy, without God showing us mercy? No, I don't think any one of us want that. I pray about that. God, please, when it comes time for my judgment, be merciful to me, a sinner. And so this goes hand in glove with, therefore, with reconciliation. Matthew 18, the steps if we have been offended. It's about repentance. It's about forgiveness. It's about mercy, which leads to reconciliation, which leads to peace, which leads to peace not but just between you and the other person, but it leads to our own sense of inner peace, a peace of mind and a peace in the heart. And Paul said, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. And so this is something that's a requirement. It is something that we are required to work on in order to be considered faithful. And this leads to something else that we can ask ourselves to consider, if perhaps we might be developing a root of bitterness. Have we ever felt, when we are in a situation, when we are offended, have we ever felt like we don't want to reconcile? I don't want to be their friend anymore. I'm done with that. Have we ever had that feeling that the offense was so great that we don't desire to make amends? Now, I'm not talking about allowing ourselves to become a doormat, let people walk all over us and just do it and do it again. Sometimes we actually have to say, you know what, I love you, but we just can't keep having this occur on over and over again. It's worth expressing that to the person. But I'm talking about, no, I don't even want it. I don't want anything to do with them anymore, because that's the last straw. I'm done. That's kind of anger, you know, where it's a type of resentment. And it's a sign, can be a sign of bitterness. Now, Paul had written that we are reconciled to God through the death of his Son, and we shall be saved by his life. So reconciliation comes before life, as before eternal life. So if we don't desire reconciliation to be at peace, then we don't want to forgive. We don't want to express mercy. And therefore, we shouldn't expect mercy. Don't expect forgiveness to us. Instead, judgment without mercy. That is not going to be pleasant. Roots of bitterness can run very deep. Kind of like the dandelion, the image of the dandelion root running way down, 6, 8, sometimes 10 inches. Perhaps, though, bitterness might be like some roots of some weeds. I've been pulling some over the last several weeks out of my lawn that are very thick. Not real deep, but very thick and matted. Difficult to get out of the lawn. Now, many of these weeds, if we leave a portion of them, they are likely to surface another day. Many times I've been out working in the garden or mowing the lawn or trying to get the lawn cleaned up, and it looks great. And then a day or two later, it looks like a weed bomb had been detonated in my yard. What happened? Where did these come from? During World War II, there was a woman in the Ukraine, and I cannot pronounce her name, so I'm not going to try to pronounce her name, but she was sitting by a window sewing. And then she heard a loud whistling noise that got louder and louder, and suddenly this huge gust of wind pushed her over. She fell off her chair and kind of like, I don't know if she was knocked out or just confused about what had just happened, what went on. But when she came to her senses, she realized that her sewing machine was gone, and there was a big hole in her floor. She went and told people that there was a bomb in her floor, but she couldn't get any officials to come and check it out, make sure everything was okay, that she was safe. And living in that part of the world at the time, the only thing she could do was to move her bed over the hole in her floor and move on with her life. And she lived with it like that for 43 years. 43 years. One day there was phone cable that was going to be run throughout the town, and it was going to be laid in the area where she lived. And so the experts started going around probing to see if there's any leftover war materials or something dangerous in the area. And the lieutenant came to her home because people were aware of this and said, "Hey, where's your bomb, Grandma?" And he kind of smiled. And she just very dryly said, "It's over in the hole in the floor." Sure enough, he went in and looked, and there was a 500-pound bomb in her floor. After evacuating nearly 2,000 people, they detonated the bomb, and the old woman had to move to a new apartment. Now, the reason I tell you this story is because there are many people that go through life having what might be likened to a bomb underneath their bed. And life goes on. We move on, we go about our daily business, but this anger, this resentment, this bitterness, it's there and it affects us. It affects the things we might say or do or how we behave. And nobody is truly safe until the bomb is removed, whether it be us or whether it be people around us. Now, weeds, as the example given, the metaphor for bitterness, weeds are not like bombs, though it is sometimes. Like I said, it seems like they seem to detonate overnight after we just clean the area up. And without using some kind of modern invention in harmful chemicals, the best method of removal is to dig them out by the root. But there is another method of getting rid of weeds that is, I think, infrequently considered by people. It is to drown them out by sowing a good amount of desirable seed. Let's go over to Ephesians 4. Every spring, I notice that the landscapers go around the community and they will aerate lawns. And I think you know what I'm talking about. They use these machines that kind of take chunks of soil out and make little holes on the lawns all around the community. And, of course, you have to pay for this. It's not something they do for free. But after they do this, there is another measure that is taken. They go around and they spread a whole lot of good seed, of good grass seed. And the hopes is that this seed will take root and it will not allow for weeds to begin to develop because there's no room for them. The weeds are choked out. So having the plot of our heart sown with good seed is the example. Because there are traits that are godly that you and I are told to develop, these attributes. And if we have these attributes, if we work at developing them, it will not allow for roots of bitterness to take hold. And if there are roots there, if bitterness is in our heart or in our mind, we try to remove it, and we can also try to choke it out. Don't give it room to grow. Overcome evil with good, like Paul said. Don't be overcome with evil, overcome evil with good. Work toward developing the character that makes for good ground. And so we can do this by reading the Bible. If we are angry, if we are resentful, if we have gone to our brother and tried to, you know, make amends and it didn't work, go to the Bible. Regardless of what the situation is, read it. Read the Bible. Memorize certain verses that we find encouraging. Memorize them and recite them. The whole 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Memorize portions or the entire thing if we're inspired. Smother the bitterness with seeds that pertain to the kingdom of God. Now recall Christ's explanation of the parable of the sower. When the sower went out to sow seed, now most of the seed that the sower went out to sow did not take hold. Three quarters, out of the four examples, three quarters of the seed that was sown did not take hold. But some fell on good ground, and it sprang up, and it yielded a crop of 100-fold. And he said in Luke 8:15, but the ones that fell on good ground are those who, having heard the word with a noble and good heart, keep it and bear fruit with endurance. Patience, also meaning endurance. And so Paul advises us with these words, Ephesians 4 and verse 29, as we wrap it up. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by which you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And instead be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. I had read one man say that bitterness is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. So the sermon today is telling us the same thing that the sermonette would have told us if we would have been able to listen to it. It's about getting our mind, it's about getting our heart right with God. Allow for God and work with Him to sow good seed in our mind, in our heart, in the ground of our bodies. And with Him and our efforts, we can remove and drown out all roots of bitterness.